We can reveal disturbing claims tonight that the use of outdated teaching methods is being linked to a crisis of illiteracy among young children in Wales. Growing numbers of children are arriving at secondary school barely able to read. Now, for decades, reading levels in Wales have been far lower than the rest of the UK and indeed the international average. But in the most recent international reading tests taken 2 years ago, Welsh children plummeted to their worst ever score. The school's watchdog previously warned that a fifth of Welsh children are leaving primary school functionally illiterate. Well, now ITV News has discovered that many Welsh schools are encouraged to use teaching methods that some claim are not just outdated, but actually damaging.
Well, that got our attention, and perhaps not for the obvious reason. The Welsh slide in the international PISA results has been going on for a while now, and lots of people embedded in the education world have been sounding notes of alarm for some time, some of them on this very podcast, about issues ranging from literacy to equity to the level of support for teachers to realise Wales's radical education reforms, which have now been going on for a decade. So in that respect, perhaps this wasn't such a huge surprise. For me, hearing an aspect of the Welsh education system being given an in-depth investigation by a mainstream media organisation, this was ITV Wales, was perhaps an even bigger story. There's been plenty of news about in the last 15 years or so, financial mayhem, geopolitical upheavals, the seemingly endless psychodramas of the previous Westminster government, COVID. But even so, leaving aside a brief period a year ago when the UK schools were actually threatening to fall down on their pupils, it's always been a surprise to me to see education so rarely in the news in any meaningful sense. The Welsh education reforms have ground on almost unnoticed for years. Curriculum documents drafted, redrafted and published. New GCSEs consulted on and written. The 2008 national curriculum quietly fading away. And all of it accompanied by nothing more than a few ritual potshots at education standards under Welsh Labour by the obviously outgoing Conservative government in Westminster. So, it must be going okay, right? Well, maybe. But from the start, we've had guests on this podcast asking some awkward questions from all sorts of angles. Curriculum, assessment, equity, post-COVID well-being. I've even thrown a few awkward questions myself, in this case at Jeremy Miles, then the Minister for Education.
I suppose the question is, do schools know this? Because what we're hearing is that potentially quite a lot of them don't. And, you know, people are coming to us and saying, oh, you know, my management want me to teach three different subjects. And then we point them in the direction of some literature or some research we've done, and they go and have a conversation and realise it's perhaps not the best idea. But is there a kind of joined up way of making sure that schools by September or potentially the following September are going to be in the right bits of that very, very big space at the moment?
Well, yeah, I mean, I hope that the work that we've been doing in particular, you know, in this last academic year, about providing access to that wider range of best practice, resources, guidance, is helping schools on that journey. But, you know, just as curriculum design is a process of iteration, so is governing. So I'm very happy to respond to, you know, individual suggestions from schools or practitioners about how we can continue to improve and refine. Now, it's really important, I think, to embed that culture of continuous learning for all of us, actually, you know, and continuous design and development. So, you know, very happy to think about what more we can do in that space, of course.
Fellow podcasters and education consultants Impact Wales have certainly been worried for a while, judging by their online commentary. And a couple of months ago, the new Cabinet Secretary for Education, Lynn Neagle, who took over from Jeremy Miles, admitted there was still too much variability and a need for more support, while not being especially specific about what that support might actually look like.
I've spoken before about my commitment to literacy and numeracy. These are fundamental gateways to learning alongside digital competence and are mandatory cross-curricular skills. A school's curriculum is at its best when it allows learners to use, develop and hone these skills, transferring and using them in new meaningful contexts. This is key to raising standards, so secondly, we will focus on developing these skills. We will work with partners to develop intensive, nationally available collaborative support to help embed literacy and numeracy across all areas of the curriculum for Wales.
So for me, the main surprise was that it's taken this long for someone to have a dig around. In this special reaction episode, I'm going to resist the temptation to get involved in the so-called reading wars or to blindly bash Curriculum for Wales. But what I do want to do is zoom out a bit, see the bigger picture of what this report might tell us about what's going on out in the country as the system continues to try to implement the Curriculum for Wales. Emma's busy teaching today, so hopefully you'll come along with me to try and find out what's going on with Curriculum for Wales. Before we look at the big picture, for anyone who missed the report on ITV Wales, let's see what's being said specifically about why so many pupils in Wales seem to be struggling so much with their reading.
In Merthyr Tydfil, this nursery class is learning sounds and blending them together to make complete words. This is known as phonics.
Harper, can you say the sound?
Decades ago, reading scientists discovered this was the most effective way of teaching very young children how to read. It's particularly effective for disadvantaged pupils.
Swing.
But this school is one of a tiny minority in Wales who teach this way. Most use another approach alongside phonics, with kids encouraged to also use pictures and context when they get stuck. The problem is, decades ago, scientists concluded this teaching method was not only ineffective, but damaging. It confuses young children, making it more difficult for them to learn to read. It even has the effect of cancelling out the benefits of phonics.
We've analysed dozens and dozens of these primary school inspection reports and found that not only are these flawed methods still in use in Wales, they're commonplace. In more than 100 of these recent reports, schools are actually being praised for using these outdated techniques by inspectors.
Since abolishing queuing, reading levels in England and around the world have risen considerably. According to reading experts, the situation in Wales is down to the government and not the fault of teachers who don't know their methods are wrong.
I was really taken in the report that a parent reported being told, oh, just get her to read more, it'll just click eventually. The reporter was talking to a pupil aged 11 who has a reading age of 4. And that sort of hit and hope, it'll be okay, it'll be fine, really reminded me of the conversation we had with Jess Danum a couple of years ago, in which she really sort of suggested that hoping for the best is not enough if you're working in a disadvantaged community. I was also really taken by that in relation to some of what Lucy Crehan's told us, that just opening things up and assuming that everything's going to turn out fine doesn't always turn out for the best in terms of coherence. I can see that there might be somebody with a big phonics kind of banner grinding an axe very clearly here. I can also see that it could get unpleasant very quickly. So what I wanted to do was speak to somebody who might be able to talk me through this in a reasonably nuanced way. I was intrigued to see a name I recognised in the text version of the ITV Wales report, Gareth Rain, head teacher of St Peter's Roman Catholic Primary School in Cardiff, and obviously a friend of the podcast. We've interviewed him around a year ago. He's been on our panel discussions as well. I was reminded of a comment he made when we came live from Research Ed not so very long ago.
It's a travesty that the new curriculum didn't focus on the science of reading. It's the biggest mistake in the whole curriculum. Having children going up to secondary school with reading ages of 6 is absolutely appalling. It's a national scandal. So the best thing that we could possibly do is know that there's a huge amount of research in there, out there about how to teach reading and use that research to teach reading as in the best possible way across our system.
That was Gareth at Research Ed 2023 speaking to us in our panel Q&A. And I've never forgotten that moment. I've filed it away for future reference, and it would appear that this is the moment to have a chat about it. So having sent a late night email to Gareth, he very kindly invited me back to his school. This is Newport Road in Cardiff. For anyone who doesn't know their Cardiff geography, it's one of the big main roads that leads out of the city, out to the east to Rumney, Llanrumney, St Mellons and on to Newport. We're about a mile out of the city here and right by St Peter's Roman Catholic Primary School, which sits right on the road and next door to a petrol station. We'll be entering down a very nice lane with some really big and posh kind of Victorian villas, but that really only tells part of the story because
The school, obviously as a faith school, draws from quite a wide geographical area. But also those Victorian villas are not the only story. There's plenty of housing association flats. There's plenty of small terraces. There's all kinds of housing. It's a very multicultural area. There's young families. There's a real wide range of people. And on the other side of Newport Road, the Cardiff area of Adamsdown is probably slightly more deprived than the area of Roath, which is on the side that I'm on now. So this is exactly the sort of place where we could really dig into some of the questions about whether strategies are working equally well for everyone, or whether there's a gap opening up between what you might call the haves and the have-nots. So it's off down to go and get myself buzzed in at the gate. Oh, hello, it's Tom Breeze from Cardiff Met here for a meeting with Gareth Rain.
Hello, Breeze.
Thank you. Well, Gareth, we're back in your office. It's been a year and a bit, I think. Nice to be back.
You're very welcome. Thank you for coming.
Well, it's lovely to pop round the corner, and you have very kindly offered to unpack some of the things that have come up in this really interesting report in the last day or so in Wales about reading. And I suppose for the benefit of those listeners, which to some extent includes me actually, who are not specialists in reading and primary reading in particular, there's a lot of talk about phonics here. And it might be good, because the report only had 4 minutes to do the whole report, to just take a bit of time to explain to me, what is this phonics thing that they keep talking about?
Well, what's really interesting is that phonics is a body of knowledge. So it's not a pedagogy, it's a body of knowledge that we have in our teaching profession. And there are actually different types of phonics. So this report is referring to a type of phonics called SSP, systematic synthetic phonics. And that's where the huge body of evidence exists that this is an effective way to teach. So systematic synthetic phonics, as the name suggests, is a systematic way of teaching phonics, which is in the curriculum for Wales. It does say your teaching of reading should be systematic and that there should be phonics that is systematic, but it's the synthetic part that I think that the report was referring to. And so this is a way of teaching the sounds of the language represented on the page in a very systematic way, so that a learner will go through the grapheme, the representation on the page, matching the sound that their mouth makes and that is audible to us. And there is a complicated system within English where there are around 44 sounds. And so the representation of that through our 26 letters needs a system, and it needs direct teaching. And that's what SSP offers us. Direct teaching of that system over a period of time, ideally until there is mastery, so that children are able to read, decode the words on the page most of the time. And by most of the time, I mean nearly all of the time. Because you'll always get opponents who will say there are some words that are hard to break down by looking at the sounds and breaking it up into its parts, segmenting and putting back together, blending. However, the huge majority of words are fully decodable. And the better the learner knows the system, the better they are able to read what's in front of them.
Because I was going to say English is a funny language, isn't it? I was thinking about, I learned a bit of German in my day and I've learned a bit of Welsh. And the beauty of those languages is they tend to do exactly what the letters say pretty much all of the time. So there's a sort of system, is there, for dealing with things like here and bear and earth and all of those, which have,
absolutely,
you know, the same sort of combination of letters, but they sound different.
Yes, and there are 44 sounds within the language, but the representations on the page are more than three times that.
Oh, yeah.
So it's that understanding of that. So for instance, one way of representing the sound A has multiple options for a child. So when they're trying to hear A and then want to know how to spell it, because of course this isn't just reading, it's also writing aspect of it, they have to go through those options within their mind. And they have to know there are many ways that I could represent this on the page. And then equally, when they look at the letters or combination of letters, they then might think, well, how does it sound in this word? How does it sound this time? And that direct teaching of this in a systematic phonics method, an SSP method, will help them with that greatly. And this works for the nearly all learners. And there will always be some opposition where some people will say it didn't work for my child, or it didn't work for this child in this class, or it didn't work for this school. But the body of knowledge that we have, the overwhelming research, is that this is the best way to provide a foundation to the teaching of reading.
And that's how I've had it described to me back in Cardiff Met, is this idea that it provides this really solid floor underneath learners. It's a thing they can fall back on. It's almost like a backup. It means that everybody's going to start from somewhere. And then there's other ways, I guess, that you can also develop your reading once you've got that floor. So, what are the other kind of bits of knowing how to read?
Sure. Well, even within decoding itself, which sits under a term of word recognition, there are other parts to word recognition. So there's the sight reading part, there's phonological awareness part of that. And beyond that, then, once a child has reached a very, very high ability of decoding, then we have the language comprehension parts of reading. And this is where there are even more parts to the recipe here now. So one of the huge roles within comprehension is background knowledge. So the more background knowledge a child has about what they're reading, probably the better they will be at reading that piece. So if I know all about football and I'm reading about football, I can probably understand all of the terms. Offside, what that means, full time, what that means, and so on. And so this will be the case whatever somebody is reading. The greater the background knowledge, the higher proficiency they will have with that piece. Again, that's only one element of this. We have the vocabulary itself. So whether it's terms, individual words, the wider the breadth of the vocabulary have, and then the deeper the knowledge of those words and all the different connotations of those words, again, the better able to read that piece. So SSP, that the report focused on, is a hugely important foundation of reading, but there is a lot more besides that also needs to be taught.
And I remember, actually, this synthetics phonics thing, I remember it being in the discussion around education in England, I think before I even started to teach, it being in the news in the sort of early 2000s, is that right?
So there was something called the Rose Report. And the Rose Report was really important in the education system in the UK at that time. But then, of course, particularly for England and through devolution, our paths kind of diverged. And so the Rose Report had looked at studies and they had found that the best ways to teach reading used SSP as a foundation. And from there, it became government policy within England that schools had to adopt an SSP programme within their practice. And so that's mandated by the English government by the UK government for England. What's happened since is that other countries have looked at the Rose Report and other reports like it, and they have gone directly to the research that informed the Rose Reports and many other research papers created since that time, and they have come up with similar findings. That there are many aspects to teaching, but if you use SSP as your foundation, then you're making a very, very good start.
And last time I was here chatting to you, I remember you took us on a tour around the school and you were talking about the post-COVID hangover, as it were. And you were saying how complex some of the issues were that some of the pupils had that were coming in new into reception. They'd had a really awful time in lockdown. And it really chimes with me then that you're talking about the importance of having background knowledge or background context to draw on when you're trying to read. And I'm thinking, well, if we've got more pupils with a sort of post-COVID hangover that means maybe they haven't got that because of the circumstances in which they found themselves. Does that even make that flaw even more important right now?
I don't have any evidence to say that that's the case. I would suggest that it might be an issue for children who particularly maybe were in year one around that time, maybe even more so than reception, but also reception. And lots of children had actually a wonderful experience with their families during COVID, where they were cared for very well and some were even kind of taught more formally with some of these things. But lots of children weren't exposed to this sort of knowledge. Parents might have wanted to, but didn't have the expertise to be able to share this sort of knowledge. In our online lessons, actually at St. Peter's, we focused on this. So we had relatively short lessons for our 4, 5, and 6-year-olds online, but the focus was on this, was on learning their sounds, learning the visual representations, the graphemes and so on, so that when they came back to us, they would be able to have something of a foundation. So I don't have the evidence to say that there is a COVID hangover in that way, but certainly all schools will have had to make up for lost time with their 4, 5 and 6 year olds who experienced those lockdowns. So it might mean that the children in year 3 and in year 4, for instance, now within our well system, might not have had those foundations that they would have had without COVID. So we should still be making sure that there aren't gaps. But of course, I would say that all the way through to year 4 and beyond anyway.
I was reading something quite interesting about the decline in pupils reading for the fun of it, motivated to read just for pleasure. And I was thinking, well, I suppose one obvious answer to that is if they can't read, they're not going to read for pleasure because they're going to find it pretty unpleasurable. How do you strike a balance in limited curriculum time between providing the floor but also making sure that there's a sort of on ramp to pleasurable reading as well?
Sure. What you just said, I absolutely would agree that if they don't have this foundation, if they aren't able to decode to a high level in the first place, they're much less likely to enjoy reading. So with all fields, really, we often want to do what we are good at. So whether that's sports, music, art, drama, whatever it might be, we're more likely to do it if we're good at it. But then there will be children who are really good at reading who are not choosing to read for pleasure. Or perhaps when we say this, we sometimes mean they're not choosing to read fiction for pleasure. So if I think of my 2 sons, for instance, both loved reading when they were young. They were both very, very good at reading. But now they almost never read any fiction. But they do read a lot of non-fiction, the both of them. And then there'll be people who don't do much reading outside of what's on their phones or their iPads or their laptops. The ability to read well doesn't mean that you will want to read later for pleasure, but it gives you a much, much better chance to do so. But I think the idea around, is there a decline? First of all, I don't know whether there is a decline about reading for pleasure, but the reasons I'd say would be multifarious. So probably having a digital device in your hand at all times that encourages you to read for short periods and then watch a video, or read for short periods and then click a link somewhere else, probably has a big impact on that.
Chatting to somebody up at Cardiff Met who knows more about this stuff than me, I was quite struck by the point that they made about the fact that how important it is, in their opinion, for a school to do the research, come down on a philosophy which is backed up, come up with a consistent approach, and then absolutely apply that consistently school-wide. And I thought, I bet I know someone who does that. And you were named as well in the report. As, you know, reading ages here are pretty good by the look of it. So what does learning to read look like here?
At St Peter's, we follow a structured programme. Interestingly, for St Peter's School, it isn't actually one of the programmes on the approved list in England, but it's because we've chosen an international programme. So it comes from the United States. So it isn't an organisation that's gone to the English government to say please approve us. So ours is taken from the United States. It is based on not just SSP, but is based on the wider science of reading. And this is why I chose the programme when I brought it into my last school and then also into this school, because it looks at all the elements of the science of reading. So what's often referred to as the parts of the Scarborough reading rope, and the Scarborough reading rope is broken down into 2 wider sections. That would be that language comprehension section that I've spoken about, and also then the word reading ability. And the program that we use, the Core Knowledge Curriculum from the US, it actually has 2 main arms. And the one arm is called skills, and it's about skills units. So it's being able to read, it's having that sight recognition of words, which isn't, by the way, the same thing as using flashcards. There's a very clear and important difference about using flashcards to teach whole words at the same time. But also, and I find this, the way that it teaches the language comprehension is perhaps unique. As well as their skills lessons when they are reading and learning to read about reading and then reading to learn, they also have a read aloud, a regular read aloud. So we use 3 a week here. And the read alouds are when teachers read from a script, but it's like listening to a story. And they show slides on a screen, which are nearly always pictures or maps or diagrams and so on. And the children will listen, and they are taught to listen. So we have like a pedagogy of oracy that includes a huge part of listening here. And then they break down the vocabulary before the read aloud. So they say, in this read aloud, you're going to come across these words. This is what the words mean. And then they'll have a discussion about those key vocabulary terms. Then they have the read aloud, which could be around 10 minutes for a younger child, anywhere up to maybe 20 minutes for a year four child. And they have this huge build-up of vocabulary and background knowledge, so that they're building their schema all of the time, and it's interlinked. So what they study in reception might get built upon in year one, and then that's built upon in year three, and then again maybe in year five, so that they're developing their schema about science, about history, about geography, about the world around us and social studies. And that's, in my opinion, as important as the phonics that is also taught in this programme. So the children are getting all aspects of that reading rope. There is a pedagogy of each of those aspects. So the teachers know the programme really well. The handbooks for the programme are very, very helpful to the teachers. And then they're able to adapt and amend as necessary for the pupils in front of them. But it is why we end up with very high reading levels by the time children leave us in year six.
This report that came out was a real sort of bombshell landing on my eyes, I guess, when I turned on my screen the other day. A child with a reading age of four who's now 11. I mean, obviously that was a shocking case which kind of dragged the report right into the sort of front of everyone's attention. But you've previously talked about children with reading ages of six going into secondary school. I mean, what was your reaction when you saw it come out? I know you don't want to kind of, you know, hit the roof and lay waste to everything, and it wouldn't be a good thing to do. But what do you think about it?
I thought that the reporter, Rhys Williams, had done a great job, and he clearly has put a lot of time and effort into researching this area and this story, because it came across so well in the delivery, but also in the content. Rhys clearly has learned to understand the story here that he is telling. So I thought that I was impressed with the storytelling itself. In terms of the actual topic, there have been many of us within Welsh education that have been asking for reviews of how we teach reading, something akin to maybe the Rose Report that took place in England, or even something smaller that just looked at those other international reports. Maybe don't do the whole thing from scratch as those reports did, but just look at what New Zealand have just found recently. They've done something similar now, where they've now said that the ways of teaching reading based on the science and the research are now law in the country. So they've just done that in this summer. Many states within Australia have done that. Mississippi has done that, and it's often known as the Mississippi Miracle because they've made such great strides in that state. So I think what Rhys was doing was bringing to the attention of the wider public something that lots of us within the education system have been talking about and thinking about and even calling for a long time. And that's to look at what we're doing, think about how we're doing it, look at the good practice that exists, and then maybe share that good practice wider within the system.
And it's almost sad to kind of say that it was almost a surprise just to see such an in-depth story about education full stop, really, because it's just not been part of the news sort of discourse for 10 years or more. So it was just a surprise to see it, really.
The BBC did a similar story, but not on the same scale as Rhys's report in the summer. So they talked about these very same issues, in fact. And then that was on both the TV and the radio. And in fact, there was a piece online about it. So it's interesting that the two major news agencies that we have now in Wales are looking at this issue. And I am sure that the government is already undertaking reviews of how we teach and what we teach within Curriculum for Wales, because any responsible government is always looking at and reviewing what we do and thinking about ways to improve. So there is a new numeracy plan, there's a new literacy plan, and I really hope and would urge ministers to look at making SSP a foundational part of any new literacy plan, so that we don't just say that we have to have systematic phonics within Curriculum for Wales, but that we have to have systematic synthetic phonics as the foundation. But then also those other elements of the science of reading that I talked about too, they should be there, and it should be incumbent upon schools to not just do the research themselves, but also to be guided towards that great research, to be able to take on programmes that we know will work.
And just finally, to broaden it out a bit, because obviously this is not my area of specialism, but I felt a lot of connections with other conversations I've had. You know, I was thinking about the conversation I had with Jess Danham, who's a history specialist who works in what she calls a working class area of Southwest Wales. She, a little while ago, was saying, oh, we can't just sort of hit and hope. It's not enough to just hope it's all going to be okay or tell ourselves it's going to be okay. Chatting to Lucy Crehan multiple times, the best-selling author, and her talking about the dangers for equity of just assuming everything's going to be okay if we just hope. And actually, the kids who've kind of got a reasonably charmed life probably will be, and the kids that maybe have got less of a charmed life might find that gap widening. Work that we've done in Cardiff Met, where we've really dug into curriculum for Wales and gone, yeah, you know, it can be good, but it's actually really hard. There's a lot of work you've got to do. Have we got time? Have teachers got time? Do you think there are any lessons here for those of us who are perhaps not reading specialists, for things to just watch out for, or things to beware of, or things to do, or things to demand?
There are different aspects, of course, to teaching, how we teach, what we teach, and so on. So whatever our discipline, whatever our field, there is pedagogical knowledge that the specialists within maybe a secondary sector should have, within further education and higher education should have and need to have. And then even within primary, we should be given the information about those things. So even if we don't have the specialists under each area of the disciplines that sit within the areas of learning, it should still be readily available to us. So we have disciplinary knowledge that we need, and we have a lot of freedom to be able to work on this curriculum, but without perhaps a lot of expertise to be able to develop what is a very open curriculum into a great enacted curriculum within our classrooms and within our schools. And so that freedom comes with opportunities, but it also comes with risks. And so my colleague, a head teacher down in Swansea, Damien Benny, he says there are 1,200 ways to get it right with Curriculum for Wales and 1,200 ways to get it wrong. And what we as a profession need to focus on so much is, do we have the knowledge within our system to be able to make each of those ways a good way or the best way for that school? And I think that if we are given very, very good information and research that is disseminated to us, that comes with excellent training, and lots of the training from CSC that we've received at St Peter's School has been based on the best knowledge available to us in these areas, then that gives us the best opportunity to do a great job.
And just back within your specialism, you showed me a book which underpins a lot of what you do. So if anybody is a phonics person or a learning to read person, what was your big recommendation?
Yeah, so there are so many great books I've read on reading from people like Dan Willingham, specialists within universities often. But an easy to read book, I think, is called The Art and Science of Teaching Primary Reading. And it's written by Christopher Such. And Christopher is such an interesting guy. He developed an interest in the teaching of reading, and then he is a very intelligent researcher and has taken as much direct research from the reports themselves and then also from those macro studies, and he's put it together in such an easy to read way that it's just like one perfect handbook for a primary school. But I would argue equally, all teachers are teachers of reading, and I'm sure that the Welsh Government has that view too. And so even though it says the art and science of teaching primary reading, I would argue that all teachers in any sector and at any age really should be looking at this book, because it breaks down all those elements of the science of reading, the reading rope I mentioned, tells us what they are, tells us what the research suggests will work, and then tells you how to do it within the classroom. It really is in one book, like a full copy that would allow you to go and do a great job within your classroom, within your department, and within your school.
1,200 ways to get it right and 1,200 ways to get it wrong. And cherish and celebrate your subject specialism. There's quite a few really important messages there. Thanks, Gareth, for letting me come back.
You're welcome. Thanks, Tom.
It's always interesting to chat to Gareth about what he does in his school, because you know you will always get clarity in terms of what goes on and why it goes on. And actually, when you do look at a lot of the quite vitriolic debate around this stuff, it's so easy to characterise people as being traditionalist or progressive or whatever it may be. And it is when you actually sit down and discuss the nuances that you discover that actually things never quite are as simple as they seem. It's interesting to note that that school was in special measures just a couple of years ago. So an interesting journey there for Gareth, and he's made some points clearly there about what he thinks and what needs to happen. Tellingly, because of course one of the other features of the education reforms is a sense that perhaps the various people involved are more on the same side than they might be in England. There's less of a sort of punitive atmosphere. It's interesting to see people are keen not to really let rip, which is maybe why it's taken as long as it has for one of these news stories to come out. But there is an increasing appetite now to really take on these low standards, these low PISA results, these concerns about lack of detail, and to do something about it. With that in mind, I contacted another friend of the podcast, Dr. Gareth Evans, who is the Director of Education Policy at Athrova, Trinity St. David, Carmarthen. And I asked him what he made of this report and what the wider implications might be for the curriculum reforms.
Recent reports into the state and teaching of reading in Welsh schools are, I think, a good representation of a much broader problem related to curriculum for Wales and purpose-based curriculum more generally. A rowing back from prescription can, on the one hand, be liberating for both pupils and teachers in that it allows for more personalised learning journeys tailored to individual need, but at the same time, it by definition opens the door to variation and difference, which poses a fairly obvious yet no less challenging question around tolerance and how far schools are able and allowed to veer from what might be considered acceptable to those responsible for ensuring equity of experience. We know that what we teach and how we teach it will change and is changing under the banner of Curriculum for Wales, but it is important that everyone working in compulsory education knows what this means in practice. In short, we need to decide what all pupils need to know and what all teachers need to do so as to give all in our education system confidence that they are doing the right thing. In the case of reading specifically, this might mean a mandated approach to the teaching of phonics, better resourcing, or more structured involvement of parents in the wider school community. But whatever way you look at it, Wales's reading scores don't make for pretty reading, and it's clearly an area that requires urgent intervention. We've made compulsory the teaching of Black, Asian, and minority ethnic history, Welsh history and Cynefin, and given the centrality of reading to all we do in education, it seems entirely reasonable that tried and tested approaches to its teaching are made universally available to all in Wales. Some might see this as government creep, but I see it more an acknowledgement that some things are not open to negotiation. England's markedly better reading scores can be traced back to the Rose Review of 2006, which emphasised the importance of phonics in teaching word recognition. More recently in Scotland, which is so often the standard bearer for what we in Wales are doing, new targeted resources have been released and endorsed by Education Scotland to support practitioners who teach young children how to read. But on the basis of recent statements, it appears that our newly reinstated Education Minister has a good grasp of the problems inherent in our new curriculum, and I welcome the fact she has used the first 6 months of her tenure to reach out and speak to people in Welsh classrooms. I've every confidence, actually, that she will act on what she has heard and take positive steps to redress our decline. Constructive challenge makes for better policy, and it's good to see the Welsh media and others taking interest in educational matters, but it's important that key policy decisions are made based on a robust and reliable evidence base, taking into consideration the full range of views. I'm no reading specialist, but I would think it'd be useful to get a more comprehensive picture of existing practice in relation to early reading in Wales, so as to look at reading, writing and language acquisition in the round. The Rose Review was a catalyst for change in England. It would make sense, I think, to consider a similar approach here in Wales.
And Gareth finished off by summing up really what most, if not all, of the teaching profession are probably crying out for now, what they've been promised for quite some time, and what will hopefully be coming down the road sooner rather than very much later.
For me, this is about setting parameters and making clear expectations, not for the purpose of accountability, but for the sake of teachers who, entirely understandably, need reassurance that in transitioning from old ways of working to new, they won't be scolded for getting the curriculum wrong. Providing more clarity will give teachers greater confidence in what they're doing and help smoothen their own development as reflective, research-engaged curriculum designers.
Well, here's hoping that both Gareths will be heartened by this passage from Lynn Neagle's statement back in the summer, in which she gave an update on curriculum for Wales and promised the following.
We will provide clear national principles about teaching and learning in literacy, numeracy and digital competence, being clear about the building blocks for stronger learning and the high quality resources that support this. This must follow the evidence. On literacy, for example, that means a clear recognition of the critical importance of phonics as well as the other essential building blocks of reading.
I suppose the only thing that worries me slightly is that Jeremy Miles said similar things about professional learning entitlements in February 2022, and we haven't seen much of that yet. So it definitely feels overdue for some of this stuff to actually see the light of day. And who will be providing those professional learning entitlements and resources is still open to question. But that's a question for another day, I think. Thanks for listening to this quick reaction episode, which we turned around in just one day. Hopefully you found it useful to dig into some of the issues, some of the specifics, but also perhaps some of the wider implications for what this might mean for the ongoing process of education reform here in Wales. Thanks to everyone who supported the creation of this episode today. Rhys Williams at ITN, who gave me permission to use some of the clips from his report. Thanks also to Gareth Rain, head teacher at St Peter's Roman Catholic Primary School in Cardiff, and Dr Gareth Evans, Director of Education Policy at Athrover Trinity St David Carmarthen. I think we will be talking about this again and all the various topics connected to it very soon. But for now, thanks for listening and have a very good weekend. Bye for now.